Welcome to These Three Remain, stories of faith, hope and love from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. My name is Rick Hill, and through this podcast we bring you conversations with a variety of people from across our church reflecting on our life and witness at this time. So please make sure you subscribe to receive future episodes and do keep sharing this with others. Now, the General Assembly is PCI's big churchwide gathering of the year, and it's a fixed point of denominational life. However, this year, like so many other things, it has had to be cancelled. So in what would have been Assembly Week, we have invited the Clerk of the General Assembly, the Reverend Trevor Gribben, and the new moderator, Reverend David Bruce, on the These Three Remain podcast, and they're joined by the Reverend David Thompson, who's the Secretary of the Council for Congregational Life and Witness, that resources local congregations for their ministry and mission. Now, I have to be really careful in this episode because I'm now interviewing people who are my bosses. But folks, thanks for taking the time to come on this podcast in what's a really busy time for each of you. I just want to start by maybe having each of you tell us a little bit about the role that you play in PCI, maybe perhaps sharing what it's normally like and what it's like just now in the middle of a coronavirus crisis. Trevor, let's start with you.
Thanks. I'm Clerk of the General Assembly and General Secretary of the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. It's a big, long title. It's a huge job description, and I'm still trying to find out after about 5 or 6 years what I'm meant to be doing. But I've sort of an oversight role of all the councils of the General Assembly, the Assembly itself, trying to help coordinate, trying to give some leadership to the staff team in assembly buildings and the whole support services side of the church, giving advice to presbyteries and to ministers, particularly on governance issues, and generally being there to be available. My work normally is a nice routine I look forward to in a general assembly every year and work up to it. And that's all been turned upside down. And a bit like everyone else, my work in life has been turned upside down too. One of the strangest things I had to do on the 17th of March at 4:45 in the afternoon, send out an email cancelling all worship and activities in the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, throughout the island. We did it coordinated with the Methodists and the Church of Ireland. We virtually shut down all Reformed worship with a click of a mouse, which was really strange. And ever since then, it's been helping congregations and presbyteries issuing what I've called formal advice and guidance, up and steer the central church. Those first few weeks were really just, I suppose, trying to keep your head above water and help everyone else do the same. And it's begun to get a bit more order as we've gone in, which I'm sure we'll come back to later.
Yeah, well, thank you for what you do. I'm even just wondering how that felt as you clicked that button and sent that out.
Really strange. Like many colleagues, I keep looking at my practical theology notes to see the section of what I'm meant to do now. But
it's not there.
it's not there. It will be written sometime, no doubt, by many wise people, even in our denomination, but too late for us now.
Yeah. David, what about you? What's the role that you play in PCI, maybe normally, and then what's that looked like as well? David Bruce.
I'm between jobs, kind of. So my regular day job is Secretary to the Council for Mission in Ireland, which in shorthand really means I help our church look outwards rather than just inwards. You know, I'm really concerned and passionate about helping congregations build meaningful connections with their communities so that they can talk about Jesus in ways that make sense. And that's north and south of the border, obviously, right across the full spectrum. We've got 540 or so congregations spread across 19 presbyteries. And I suppose our job is to try to help them engage in mission. So that's what I regularly do. As I say, I'm between jobs because the presbyteries of the denomination, when they were electing their new moderator, decided that they would ask me to do it. And so a huge honour to be asked. And that starts on the 1st of June.
Okay. We'll come back to maybe what that's going to look like for you in a moment. David, what about you as well?
So I head up the work of the Council for Congregational Life and Witness. And it's the department in assembly buildings that's primarily responsible for resourcing congregations. So if you're listening and you've used any PCI resources or you've been to events for children, young people, elders, things about pastoral care, worship, outreach, discipleship, there's a fair chance they've come from our department. And of course, women's ministry and PW's in there too. So immediately the coronavirus lockdown struck, we immediately discovered with so many things to wind down, so many planned events and activities. And that was a huge job in itself and had to be done very quickly. But alongside that, we quickly moved to bringing up these three Remain initiatives that this podcast is part of. But there's lots more, of course, to these three Remain than that. There's blogs and tides, devotional material, prayer resources, Zoom Bible studies and the like. So it's all been a bit of a whirlwind to get all that up and going, but also really encouraging. And I'm also involved now in helping a couple of task groups think through what happens in congregational life as the lockdown restrictions are phased out and we begin to edge back towards some sort of return. So never a dull moment, because quite literally everything's new at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to listen to all of you talk about sort of adapting to fit the challenges of these times. So if we can focus a little bit on then what that has looked like for the General Assembly, or what that will look like for the General Assembly. Trevor, can you tell us about how things have had to happen or will happen next week?
Okay. This year, as I said earlier, is going to be totally different. As we came upon the restrictions, as the restrictions clearly were coming, we got a bit of a heads up from government, and we're able to have a general council on about the 18th or 19th, I think it was, of March, just before we had to stop having large meetings, socially distant in the assembly hall, people sitting all over the place in single tables. And that general council was able to make a recommendation that we hold an email general assembly, basically, to take two decisions, to cancel the main meeting of our general assembly the first week in June, because that had been called by William Henry, called it when he closed last year's assembly, and then to appoint a standing commission, a group of about 25 people, to take necessary decisions that the general assembly would take. That was conducted online. The votes came in and the jury counted, and 93.6% of the voting membership voted in favour of those resolutions. So an assembly commission has been appointed. It will be meeting at the normal time, actually, the very first week in June, starting on Monday night with an installation of our new moderator, and then doing business on Tuesday and Wednesday. It'll be taking non-controversial decisions that need to be taken. It will be remitting a fair bit of business to hopefully a future special assembly when we can all meet together again. And it will also be taking any urgent decisions that need to be taken because they're time related. That will be very different. I was amazed, in a sense, that our church had the level of trust to appoint that commission. It's never ever happened before. The assembly has never delegated that kind of authority and power to a small group. And it probably shows just how unprecedented these times are. It was a decision, I think, led by the Lord, because we now realize that far from being able to be back in August or September meeting again with 700 or 800 people in a big room, I doubt we're going to be able to do that in 2020. And I doubt we're going to be able to do it in the first few months of 2021 either. So that commission is going to be very important, that we can take decisions that we're not going to grind to a halt as a denomination. And those people obviously need to be very wise in the decisions they take, because with great power, in a sense, to take those decisions goes a huge responsibility to try to sense the mind of the church, but perhaps even more importantly, the mind of the Lord in what we do and how we do it moving forward. So that will be a different General Assembly. It'll be different for David. Who'll have to moderate will be installed in a service in Assembly Hall with just five of us present, but streamed, and a whole lot of people on Zoom all present to vote in Zoom. We're going to have a Zoom vote on the Monday night of Assembly, and we're going to broadcast a Zoom vote for the entire world to see. They're all going to have to put up their hands. Some of the Presbyterians will struggle to do that, but they'll have to put up their hands to vote and elect David. There's 25 voting. As I told him, he needs 13 to get the job. So we'll see how that goes.
Is it like Britain's Got Talent?
Yes, but there's only one competitor.
And who's got the big buzzer?
Right, well, guys, they could say no. And of course, you're listening to this on Wednesday. So I don't know what Alan is going to do if they vote me out and you still have this podcast to broadcast. This will be very interesting. It'll be
a lot of editing done on this episode very quickly, perhaps.
We'll just cut and paste William Henry back in again, I think. It'll be a challenge.
Trevor, I'm even wondering what things will you miss this year? And maybe do you sense, is there anything that you're looking forward to about this as well?
I'm going to miss David Bruce and his robes. I really am. I've been looking forward to that for months now, to see him standing there in his full attire so that we could all have a quiet, encouraging giggle. All the staff who work with him in Assembly Buildings, I think, are disappointed that won't happen.
Well, they just wouldn't know who it was standing up there if I was dressed like that.
What we miss, look, the General Assembly often say, language is important. It's Presbyterians gathering in General Assembly. It's not a meeting. It's something we do together. It's us meeting together. And there's a huge relational thing there. Colleagues meet together. Elders meet together with other elders and ministers. Ministers meet together with their year group again. And we genuinely do wait upon the Lord. Some of the highlights of the assembly in the past number of years hasn't been the controversial decisions. They're never particularly highlights. But things like listening to the global church has become one of our key things, where we bring brothers and sisters from across the world and we take an afternoon to listen to them and to learn from them. I'm really sad we're not able to do that this year. We'll need to find a different way of doing that in 2020 later on. Communion, the biggest meeting of the General Assembly used to be the Judicial Commission. It's now the communion service. I think that's wonderful. And that service, when we also remember colleagues who have passed on since the assembly last met, and we meet together around the Lord's table and the moderator preaches to the assembly. That's very special. And I think many people are missing, not just in the assembly, but in congregations, that sense of being together and to being together around the Lord's table indeed. So I think people will miss that. And we'll miss the cut and thrust of debate. Sometimes people say, Trevor, you're far too democratic in your church, of all these people saying all these things and making all these speeches. That is who we are. And that is to listen to each other, to vote on occasions, and to try to come to a mind together. Rarely do we go from the assembly divided. We might go away with different views, but we respect each other's views and we come to that mind. And we'll miss that this year. It will be different. 25 people making those decisions will be very different.
Okay, thanks. David, this might be a difficult question for you to answer, but what do you think it might look like to be a moderator during this year?
Hebrews chapter 11 begins with an amazing statement about the life of faith. And it says, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. Now that, I think, exactly describes my emotions, my feelings, and probably also my analysis of the situation at the moment. I genuinely don't know what's in front of us. I feel as if I'm walking into the dark. Having said that, there are other scriptures which are hugely encouraging. God describes his word as like a light to our path. And I sense that he will show us and direct us with enough wisdom, enough insight that we need to be able to make sense of the task before us in any given moment. But I don't want to give a long answer to what's a really important question, but simply that faith requires of us that we step out, even if we can't forecast, anticipate, or even plan for what's there. And I think the entire church is on such a journey at the moment. I'll be saying a variety of things to people along the way. I've planned some of what I want to say. One of the things I'll be saying to the General Assembly Commission members is drawing from a very important incident at a time of crisis that the people of God faced. It was at a time of succession between King Saul, who was coming to the end of his reign, and David, who was about to start his reign, and it was clear that God had called David to this task. And when he was, the process of transition was not only complex, it had become deeply toxic and military. And he was building up his resources to enable him to progress. And amongst all the military buildup, he identified a number of people. They were called the men of Issachar. It's a little verse that's tucked in Second Chronicles. But these people were brought in to the mix because they understood the times and they knew what Israel needed to do. And I'll be drawing some thoughts from that in relation to the work of the General Assembly Commission, because I think that's what we need. We need people who have an understanding of what's before us. It's unprecedented. Everybody says that. But we also need people who know how to plan, build strategies that will bear the weight of our plans so that we can allocate budgets, so we can make decisions about work that we start, but also perhaps work that we need to stop. Do you know, these are tough times, and I'm not going to minimize the demands that are going to be placed on all of us as we navigate this. And I recognize that some of that is down to me in the way that I communicate and give confidence to people in leadership, and I'll do my best, you know, but ultimately I'm depending on God for this, as we all are. So you can probably hear in the tone of my voice, I'm not trivializing this. I'm burdened about it. Recognize that this is a seminal moment in our history. Really do need to get this right. We will doubtless make mistakes, and there are going to be hard decisions. Trevor's already hinted at some of that. This is not going to be easy, but we will, under God, follow his lead and do his bidding.
And each year, David, the moderator takes a theme for the year. Can you share a little bit about what that theme is for you this year, and maybe why you chose it for this season of church life?
At the opening night, I plan to say a few words about the book of Ruth. Now, I've only got a few minutes to work with, just with the constraints of that event, but that's enough. The story of Ruth is just a beautiful story, of course. It's at a superficial level, it's a love story, but it's a story of tragedy as well, because her life was broken. Everything in her circumstances was broken due to the death of her young husband, and she was left a widow and big decisions in front of her. There was a famine in the land. Was she to go home to lockdown with her mother in Moab, which is where she was from, or was she going to take a step of faith into the unknown and go back home with Naomi, which is actually what she did. She went to a new home, a new place that wasn't hers, a new people with new language and new customs. And she said, where you go, I will go. Your God will be my God. Your people will be my people. So she made a decision that for her, the transition through this time of disaster, painful though it was for her, was going to involve finding a new home with God's people. So the theme of home is what I'm going to settle on for the year. It's a rich biblical theme. You can take it at all sorts of levels. Let me give you just a couple of examples. Abraham was called to leave a home, a place that he was settled in and familiar with, to go to a land of which he knew nothing. But God told him to go, and off he went. It was a Hebrews 11 kind of moment. And in fact, he's mentioned in Hebrews 11 as an example of this, walking by faith. So sometimes we're called on a journey like that to go from one place to another, and it involves faith. But then there are people who have come to us from other countries. They have made Ireland their home. And in a lovely way, many of them have made Presbyterian congregations scattered all over Ireland their spiritual homes. And what a blessing that has been to us. It's actually been transformational. And it's not just that we see these folks as, you know, visitors, even long-term visitors to us. The places where this works best are the places where we see these folk as us. They're at home with us. So they've been elected as elders. They're on committees. They're leading activities. They're part of the warp and weft of our community life as the people of God. So there's a couple of examples among many, many others that I'll be exploring and unpacking in the course of the year around the theme of home.
Brilliant. We'll look forward to hearing more and hearing you unpack that throughout your year. Trevor, in your role as clerk, you play a really key role in liaising with the government and advocating for the needs of congregations and their members too. What are the issues you sense we will be grappling with as church and society as we move into the fourth month of lockdown?
I suppose, Rick, with colleagues in other churches, I suppose I've come to conclude what I think many of us are coming to realise, that coming out of lockdown is going to be far harder than going into it. You went into it very quickly. There was an amazing shock to the system, both of us as individuals in our homes and families, in businesses, organisations, and in the church, both locally and regionally. But coming out of it is going to be really, really challenging. We want to come out of it as a society on this island, north and south, in a way that will protect people. The cost and pain of these past months and the gains that we have made in these past months can't be lost. One thing I'm coming to realize is, you know, we can all be cynical about politicians. We can all take a go at politicians, and, you know, sometimes they give us a lot to take a go at. But I wouldn't want to be a politician. I wouldn't want to have to be taking the kind of leadership, you know, Robin Swan and Arlene Foster and Michelle O'Neill is having to take. You know, those are tough decisions. And one of the things that the churches have found is that we've begun to work even more closely together. The church leaders, which David will join that group very shortly, the church leaders meet together every fortnight now on a Friday. We're meeting regularly with the Northern Ireland executive, ministers and officials, and the Taoiseach and his officials. And we're coming to recognize that these are human beings, flesh and blood, and they make mistakes, but the vast majority of them are trying their best. So I think as a society, as a community, North and South, we need to try to stay together coming out of this. And that's us in the church too. I want to move much quicker, the bit of me. I want to get back to normal. We all do. I get back to our congregations, our worship. I want to get, we furlough over 50 staff in assembly buildings. I want those people back in, doing their job that God's called them to. Leaders, everybody, as much as I'm a leader or David's a leader, I want them given leadership again. I want our ministers and elders and our youth workers back. I want our services of worship back. But I also got to realize that we got to be patient. Being patient is going to be the challenge. It's going to be a challenge for congregations. When we come back, we're going to come back in small numbers. We're going to have maybe some people at worship services, but many people at home. We're going to live in a world where it's partially physical, partially virtual. We're going to have to learn new ways to do our youth work in these coming months, to reach out to people in these coming months. We're going to have to build on the amazing outpouring, I believe, of God's Spirit upon his church in these days. You know, there are people who are listening to God's word preached and worship services taking place online who had never been near church again. You know, I remember one of my favorite passages is in Luke 4, you know, when Jesus was very misunderstood, when they cheered him at one point and then they tried to kill him at the end of the passage when he told them that the gospel was for other people, all of them for the people within the wall. They didn't like that. But Jesus, quoting from the Old Testament, said, "Then the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he's anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." You know, I don't come from a very emotive church background. That's not who I am. But I honestly think it's the year of the Lord's favor. These are days when God is doing new things amongst us. And we got to take a lot of that with us into the future. And I think people, government, want to hear from churches. Government respect that key community cohesion that local congregations bring to villages and towns and cities up and down this island. And we got to build in that. We got to work with people. We got to be patient and gracious. It's not about our rights. We got to watch out for the vulnerable. We got to speak up more for them than we do for ourselves. And we also got to watch out for liberty and freedoms, which have had to be constrained. But we got to make sure those liberties and freedoms come back. Freedom of expression, freedom of movement, freedom to relate at the right time. So these are challenging days. But, you know, these are days of huge opportunity as well, both spiritually and also relationally in this island, as we work beside people and people are open, perhaps in a new way, to what God might be saying to all of us.
Yeah, that's helpful. David, I would love to think about what the Council for Congregational Life and Witness have been trying to do to respond to congregations' needs in lockdown, and perhaps what kind of things are maybe planned up ahead as well.
So one of the great things that we've noticed is the creativity of congregations and how quickly they have been able to get back up on their feet when all the usual way of doing things seemed to fall apart and begin to do some amazing things. And that's part of what Trevor was saying too, in terms of God's Spirit at work. And so in Congregation Life and Witness, we've just tried to make a few things available that will help in that process. So under the These Three Remain section of the website, we deliberately wanted to put everything in one place and give it prominence so that congregations could find things that would help. And so the best way to see that all that's available is really to go in there and rummage around for a bit. So there's some things in there for daily use. You can sign up for the Tides devotional or the Let's Pray prayer points. Then there's two twice weekly blogs, and they reflect on a whole range of aspects of this season of life that we're all living through, whether for congregations or as individuals. And over the summer, they're going to turn their focus a little bit to what we're learning. Again, whether as congregations, what we're learning, or as individuals as we live through pandemic and lockdown. There is, of course, this weekly podcast, and there's also an In This Moment prayer, which is a new thing. And it really just tries to give us some words of what we're going through at the minute that we can take with us to the Lord in prayer so that we really can renew our faith and our hope and respond in love to what's happening. Most recently, we've added some biblical reflections for discussion that can be used in Zoom Bible study groups, because pretty quickly we were hearing that the experience of leading and participating in a Zoom Bible study is very different than sitting in a front room and talking to people face to face. And so they're shorter, simpler, and just give people a framework to work through. They're called Unprecedented. There's four of them up there now, and there's four more coming very soon. So that's the stuff that we've been doing up until now. Up ahead, listeners can expect us to move the focus towards beginning to stimulate thinking about what it will be like for congregations to come back again. And that'll include a digital and distance program of activities. We used to call on people together face to face. Can't do that anymore. So we're having to move to a digital and distance platform to do that. And we've got some ideas about how we're going to do that from September onwards. And there's also been a series of Bible studies written that will help congregations as they come back and their members to think about what we've been through and what God's been teaching us. And when we're in the moment when we have the opportunity for groups to meet again and learn together, then we'll release those Bible studies. And all of that's aimed at helping us to learn what God's been saying to us, because we don't want to just return to business as usual, because if we do that, we've missed such an opportunity to hear God speak. We want to be further reshaped in the image of Christ as his body, the church, by what we've experienced in these days.
Thanks, David. I mean, each of you hold a big picture view. You're able to see the breadth and of our Presbyterian church across Ireland. I'm wondering if you could each share with us a little bit of your perspective of maybe what you've observed in the wider church over the past few months, maybe whether you're encouraged or you're challenged or whether you're concerned or whether you're hopeful. And maybe if there's one thing that you might each be able to say or want to say at this time to congregations and their members who might be listening to this right now. David Bruce, maybe if you wanted to come in on that first.
I think it's a mixed picture. Some congregations, frankly, are struggling for survival, and they're making that clear to us by the things that they say and the forecasts that they're making about their capacity to keep going. Others, as Trevor has said, have taken the opportunity to explore this online experience and have been highly imaginative and indeed effective in drawing folks into their orbit, and that's been super to watch. Of course, what that continues to be like as we move into what a medical friend of mine calls the new temporary, it's not so much the new normal, remains to be seen. So I think the story is very mixed, and we mustn't minimize the genuine struggles that a lot of our, particularly our smaller churches, are facing at the moment. What I would want to say to them, if I could draw from scripture again, the Psalms have proved to be rich, and God has used the Psalms in remarkable ways in the past number of weeks, I think. And part of that, of course, is because the Psalms are steeped in lived experience, often in times of difficulty. Psalm 31 has popped up a lot as ministers have looked for places to go. And one of the reasons for that is linked to my theme, actually. It's the idea of refuge and fortress and a place of safety, a place of strength that God provides. So he says, the writer says in verse 3 of Psalm 31, "Since you are my rock and my fortress, for the sake of your name, lead and guide me. Free me from the trap that is set for me, for you are my refuge. Into your hands I commit my spirit. Of course, those words were borrowed by Jesus at a moment of central crisis, literally for him. Then over the page in Psalm 31, towards the end of it, is another thing that I would want to add to that when I was speaking to congregations and maybe leaders in congregations who are struggling. The psalmist manages to turn this crisis around again as a function of his faith. And he says, "But I trust in you, O Lord. I say, you are my God. My times are in your hands." And I think that's a timely word for people who feel that the responsibility for our times are in our hands, that it's up to us to plan and negotiate and maneuver our way out of this. Now, there's a sense, of course, in which human responsibility requires that of us, but ultimately, our times are in God's hands. And a step of faith, an encouragement of faith, might be to reassure our folk of that.
Trevor, can you share a bit of your perspective maybe on something that you would want to say to congregations at this time?
Yeah, I would just pick up where David left off there. You know, that concept of walking by faith, I suppose that's come to me more and more as I talk to colleagues, as I think of my own work life. But if I'm honest about it, as I think about my own life before the Lord, you know, we often say, you know, it runs off our tongue that we walk by faith and not by sight. But I greatly prefer to walk by sight. I like to see what's ahead. I like to understand what's around me. I like to be sort of nearly half in control of my own life, at least, and maybe of my work life a bit. And that just isn't possible. Wasn't possible in those crazy first 2 or 3 weeks of this when everything just seemed to fall apart. And I think probably like most people, I've been through, and many of our ministers, most of our ministers and leaders who I'd speak a fair bit to, have been through some sort of a emotional roller coaster, maybe even a spiritual roller coaster of highs and lows. And we're still going through that. Our congregations are still going through that. David Bruce is quite right in what he said there. Some of our congregations are going to be struggling for their very survival. Some of our ministers have been struggling and are struggling. I've had colleagues who I greatly respect in tears on the phone to me, ministers who say, "Trevor, there's never been a time in my life when I haven't gone to my people when they needed me, when there was death or illness, that I haven't gone to their homes, I haven't gone to their hospital beds." And it's not just people having to learn to do new things. It is a genuine breaking of the heart. There are people longing to be back together again, longing to be with their families, longing to be with their church families. And sometimes, you know, we do try to be positive, and we should be positive. There are many creative things happening, both in congregations, the work David Thompson referred to, done here centrally, the resources being produced. There's much good stuff being good, but we've got to realize also people's hearts are breaking. You know, the theme of lament that runs through the scriptures, we are missing so much by not being together. Families are missing so much. People are losing loved ones. The funerals are happening. People are being buried without people being able to mourn properly even. So, you know, I'm aware as I look out there of a huge mixture of encouragement, as I said earlier, but also of pain. And we have to be realistic about both. And that's where the grace of God comes in. You know, the amazing grace of God. As David Bruce said there as well, it's not us and our leadership that put the church or the society or the country back together again. It will be the Lord. And we need to depend on him, perhaps, and we realize now, even more than we ever have before. You know, the grace that saves, we are held and kept by him, is also the grace that sustains. His grace is sufficient. And look, I suppose like Paul of old, I and probably most Christians in Ireland have prayed that the Lord would take this thorn in the flesh away from us. This is going to be with us a long time, but his grace is sufficient for us. So I've got that. I don't want to so overemphasize how well things are going, to ignore the pain, the hurt, and also to say to myself, and I've had to say it to myself, and it's been a struggle sometimes for me at home. I'm a bachelor, I live by myself. And it's sometimes a struggle. I got to say to myself that it's okay at times to be frightened, afraid, worried, and anxious. That is okay. That is not a sign of weakness as a Christian. It's perhaps a great sign of honesty as a Christian. There's no point saying his grace is sufficient and then never needing his grace because we're self-contained God altogether. You know, so look, as ministers, as elders, as leaders, as people in our congregations, we got to be real about our emotions, our feelings. And actually, as we're real with those around about us, that will speak reality and authenticity into their situations. And that will be part of the witness we have as believers today.
I think, like David and Trevor, I'm just struck by so many sad stories as well, of people who've lost loved ones in really sad circumstances that are just not in any way normal. And it's easy when you sit in a place where you're meant to look at the big picture to lose focus on those things. But it's just so important that we have pastoral sensitivity at the moment, whether for people in our congregations or people outside or neighbours who are just going through some really difficult situations. And along with all of that, I think, is just an increased level of stress. And so one of the things I've been thinking about a lot as we approach the summer season is, what's that going to be like? Because many of us are not going to go off on our holidays the way we usually do, and the caravan park's not going to be open, and we're not going to decamp to Portrush or Kilkeel or wherever it is we go. And what's it going to be like in the summer for congregations as well? Because so many of their activities that they're used to just aren't there. And they've also got the added stress now of trying to maintain maybe a pace that they set at the start with all the digital stuff that they're going to find really difficult to maintain. So one of the things I think we need to be saying to ourselves as congregations is that it's okay to slacken the pace a little bit over the summer and make sure that what we're heading into is sustainable. In any journey or project in life, there's a messy bit in the middle, isn't there? Because at the start, the adrenaline carries us along because everything's new. And we've been there in this crisis in the first few months. And towards the finish, we make a big push, don't we, to get things over the line. And that time's going to come when we need to make the push. But in between, in the middle, that's often when we begin to feel our faith is flagging, or our steps are faltering, or our hope is fading. And I just sense at the minute in many of the conversations I have and the general mood that just at the moment we're entering that messy middle, and that middle bit might go on for some time. So even as we think ahead in the summer, it's okay to slacken the pace a little bit. It's okay to say we don't have to do everything every week the way we have been over the last number of months, or we will burn ourselves out. And so I think we do at the moment need to listen to God and just remember that there's no fast forward button here, and we're going to have to learn patience. We're going to have to learn perseverance as never before. And we're going to have to try and keep in step with the Spirit and not want to go faster than he's leading us and not lag behind either, but allow him to set the pace.
Finally, folks, we've been asking each contributor to share something from Scripture that has especially spoken to you in these days. I mean, we've had lots of Scripture weaved into this conversation already, which has been really, really rich. But maybe if there's one thing that you would love to share that has been speaking to you.
Well, I've been taking my turn in front of the camera to help with the teaching in Eglinton Presbyterian, where I go. And on Sunday, I was speaking about Isaiah 40 and verse 31. They that wait on the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar in wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. And that seemed to resonate for me and for others, because it is a call to wait on the Lord, and that's what we're doing. We're having to do it whether we like it or not. And I guess this is one of those verses that when you go into a Christian bookshop, it's emblazoned over everything. There's eagles soaring, and there's runners striding, and there's walkers pouring along. And all that's great and true and very encouraging. But none of that comes without the first bit of the verse, which is maybe one of the hardest of spiritual disciplines, to wait on the Lord and his timing and trust that our times are in his hands. And that's where we want them to be.
Trevor?
Well, I nearly panicked there because I thought David was going to say Isaiah 43, because that's the passage I want to talk about. It's unashamedly my favorite passage probably in the Bible, if not, well, certainly the Old Testament. It's written at a time when God's people were in exile, when things were really tough. And in the opening three verses there, God makes some amazing promises, which I've heard preached on as I've visited a variety of online churches over the last number of weeks. You know, that great promise in verse 3, when you pass through the waters, I will be with you. It's not if you pass through the waters, it's when. You know, suffering and struggle and heartache come to believers and Christians every bit as much as anybody else. When you pass through the waters, but the promise of God, I will be with you. But it's the first verse that's amazing. Fear not. Many times does God say in the scriptures, fear not, fear not. And then the promise, three bits. For I have redeemed you, I've called you by name, you are mine. Just to impress my former teachers, I'll let you know that those are in the perfect tense, those verbs. They're past events with present and future significance. I have redeemed you. You are redeemed. You always will be redeemed. I've called you by name. I know you. I always will know you. I've made you mine. You are mine. You always will be mine. You know, I hold on to that every day. In the crises in my life, those words have been so important to me. And that's words that God gives to his people today. Fear not, I have redeemed you. The work is done. I called you by name. I know you. You are mine. And nothing can ever change that.
Thanks, Trevor, for that reminder and also your honesty throughout this episode as well. I appreciate it. And now we'll give the last word. Since this might be happening a lot over the next 12 months, the last word over to our incoming moderator, David.
William Henry, last year's moderator, did a really good thing post-March when lockdown happened. He conducted a series of online services for the whole church, and they were a great encouragement to lots and lots of people. I'm planning to continue those online services, and I hope to center over a number of weeks our thoughts on Ephesians. And the reason for that is really to address what David was talking about, this bit in the middle where we're kind of recalibrating and lengthening our stride and recognizing that we probably do have to reimagine how church sits and what indeed what church is. So I'm going to try to discipline myself not to say to the church what I think, but to encourage the church collectively to examine and see what God says to us in Ephesians, which is a letter very much about the church. So the scripture I want to share is from chapter 3, verse 18. I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power together with all the saints to grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ, and to know this love that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. I could speak for an hour on that, but let me just say that I think we need to be filled. Many of us are running on empty, and there are all sorts of reasons for that, but we need to be filled. And my prayer is that the church will be filled through this whole experience with the knowledge of Christ's love, which is extensive in all of these ways, but that we might be filled to all the measure of the fullness of God.
Thanks to each of you for what you've shared and how you've shared it as well. And we just really encourage you to be praying for each of these folks over the next few weeks and months as they go about all their various roles. So we'll be back next week with another episode, and please do remember to share with us any of your own stories of faith, hope and love with us via email, and we'll get back to sharing them in the next episode. So thanks for listening to These Three Remain, stories of faith, hope and love from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. See you next time.